At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers. This is InvestTalk, independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our Tuesday, February 28th, 2023 edition. I'm Justin Klein, and I'm excited for this hour to talk to you and answer your finance and investment questions, and as always, give my straightforward and unbiased answers. And today was quite the volatile day in the market, the up early, down late, and this is kind of what can be expected. A lot of choppiness in the marketplace over the past, especially the last 4 or 5 months or so, really since the October bottom. And I think a lot of investors are confused, but make no bones about it. This is a different market. This is a market that is not predicated on low interest rates, right? It's a shift towards a new era. And our main focus point is in regards to that, which we'll get to. But my goal here is to help you navigate this changing market environment and take advantage of the right opportunities and avoid the pitfalls, because there are a lot of pitfalls in the market and in the endeavor of investing. And just because you don't feel them at certain times doesn't mean you aren't taking that risk. And new risks are emerging, and that means new pitfalls tend to emerge as well. So my goal here is to help shape your thinking in order for you to become a successful investor. So I encourage your participation, and you can give our anytime listener line a call right now at 888-99-CHART with your finance and investment questions. Now, I have a lot of material to cover on today's show, which is number one, our focus point, which is about reshoring. And could reshoring be the theme for ETF investors going forward? Now, in the mid-2020, reshoring and onshoring or nearshoring were mentioned in the quarterly earnings calls of around 180 different U.S. companies. So we're going to look at that theme and where we are, both near and long term. And time permitting, I also want to touch a bit on some other topics as well, which we're going to get to. I have them up here, but we'll see if we have time for those. Now, I also have your voice bank questions. One is on corporate bonds, another is on Amazon, and some iTunes review questions as well. So I've got this all planned for today's episode of Invest Talk. But as always, most importantly, your live calls are a number one at 888-99-CHART. Let's check in on the market today. Today was a modest down day. That's what I would call it. We were up early and down later in the day. Closed the U.S. market down about 0.25%. Small caps were down 0.03%, so barely down on that front. Smaller mid caps definitely outperformed. And yeah, it was just kind of a pause day after yesterday's pretty green day overall. So that was the market today. Now let's go to our first listener question, and it's Sid in North Carolina. He's looking at Freeport McMoRan FCX.
Hi, Justin. Good evening. Thank you for taking the call, and thanks for the wonderful show.
No problem.
Yeah, I do have FCX in my portfolio along with the X also, and both of them I am sitting more or less around 30% of profit. But looking at a lot of volatility, which you just mentioned, right? Should I hold for a long time or just take the profit off the table? If you could give me a guidance for FCX as well as the X both, that would be great. Thank you so much.
Sure. Now looking at FCX, Freeport McMoRan, and U.S. Steel X. Now these are they're in the same metals and mining space, but two different commodities or end products, copper and steel. I know they sound synonymous in a lot of ways, but their dynamics of their the supply dynamics, just to say, and demand dynamics are pretty different. Now, I like Freeport. I call Freeport the Exxon of the copper space. Now, they do have some exposure to gold and other minerals, but mainly their revenue is derived from copper. And so their business is going to ebb and flow with the price of copper, and the copper price has been done pretty well recently. You still have low inventories of copper overall. And to me, this is the largest, safest name in the space. To me, it's not the best name in the copper space, but it's the safest name because it's the largest, well-diversified, et cetera, $68 billion market cap. I would hold FCX. I have no problem with it. Now, X, on the other hand, U.S. Steel, very different story here. This is U.S. Steel. This is a steel producer, and its business is up and down all the time. And we've done deep dives on the space, and U.S. Steel, well, it's pretty good, better than the average steel company that you can buy. There are a couple others in North America that are head and shoulders in quality above it. So I would be looking at competitors to U.S. Steel and ones that have more consistent long-term profitability. I can't tell you what they are because I can't sit there and recommend them to you, but I would do a deeper dive. Not a name, like I said, U.S. Steel, that I would own longer term. I'd rather own some of the competitors. So one pretty good. The others need to be traded out for better quality name. Now we're moving into a break, but it won't last long. On the other side, I will take your live calls on our anytime listener line at 888-99-CHART.
Justin Klein is here and ready to take your calls live. Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, my main focus point concerns the story behind this question. Could reshoring be a theme that investors need to pay attention to? Now, in mid-2022, reshoring and onshoring or nearshoring were mentioned in nearly 180 quarterly earnings calls. That's a lot. And this is backed up by a recent statement by the world's largest asset manager, which is BlackRock. And they basically said that they named reshoring the top theme to watch in 2023 in its thematic outlook report. And they talk about the convergence of demographics, technology, and geopolitical change. And I've been talking about this for a while, but it's something you really have to pay a lot of attention to. And what's most interesting about this is that it changes the dynamic of our economy, and something that most everyone's not used to. You know, a lot of people are used to the tech sector being weak, the housing sector being weak, the financial sector being weak, and the economy being okay. You know, because those three sectors have been greatly reliant on cheap cost of capital, low inflation. And what's interesting is that I kind of almost call it from a political perspective, a blue versus red economy, right? The tech sector, the finance sector, which tend to, you know, politically lean more blue. And then you have the manufacturing sector lean more red, right? The industrial sector lean more red. And interesting enough, right now, the red part of the economy is doing much better. And what you're seeing here is, after really a half century of globalization, where companies benefited from higher margins, it supported consumer spending habits, it opened up global opportunities for trade and investment, all of this led to the famous book by Francis Fukuyama, which is called The End of History, basically saying, hey, the fighting that we had for hundreds and thousands of years between factions is slowly going away because of that globalization. And what you've seen recently with U.S.-China relations and obviously Russia's invasion of Ukraine, all of that is reversing in a major way. And we're becoming a more bifurcated world. And countries and businesses increasingly recognize that they need to build resilience into their supply chains. And that geopolitics can really impact, especially access to key resources like energy. You're seeing that what that's happening over in Germany and their access to cheap natural gas from Russia. Now, Societe Generale's cross-asset research paper recently estimated that as many as 350,000 new jobs were created last year in the U.S. because of reshoring of manufacturing. That's a multi-decade high. Now, in mid-2020, reshoring and onshoring, like I said, were mentioned 180 different companies, reports. Now, and that's gathering pace, and the global international trade is actually now trending lower. And it's at a declining pace you haven't seen in five decades. And there's some other themes to look at as well, not just manufacturing. Obviously, clean energy to a degree. Now, remember, these themes, you don't want to just invest in them blindly. You don't say, oh, manufacturing is going to benefit, and so I'm just going to go buy manufacturing companies. You have to look at valuation. You have to look at which ones are going to benefit the most, which ones are going to have headwinds along with tailwinds. You really have to do a deeper dive. And oftentimes when things are too talked about, they become overpriced. So don't take any of these kind of themes and say, oh, I'm just going to go buy them. Think of this as a jumping off point for your research. Okay. So clean energy, obviously there's money with the Inflation Reduction Act going there. You also have semiconductor and the CHIPS Act, $280 billion to support R&D and onshoring of chip manufacturing. Right now, only 12% of semiconductor chips are manufactured here in the U.S. That's down from 37% back in 1990. And global companies have announced more than $350 billion to build chips here in the U.S. And then automation, that's another one that is, I think, probably one of the biggest, because our demographics, while they're not as terrible as Japan or China or Russia, we still have an issue where our labor supply is going to be relatively constrained. That's why you're probably going to see unemployment remain relatively low. And so those companies are going to invest in automation to kind of make up for the higher wage pressures. Okay. So I think automation is a big one that's underappreciated amongst all of this onshoring theme. Probably number two would just be straight up industrial production and manufacturing in my mind. And then semiconductor chips would be number three, because I do think it's going to take time. Remember, all of this is going to be a process. This is not going to be done overnight. It's going to probably take 5 to 10 years for this process to really take shape. Okay. And you know, Apple's already moved production over to places like India, but still next year, 90% of their hardware are going to be produced in China. So they're having trouble moving away. So it's not something that's going to happen overnight, but it's going to be a consistent process over the next decade. Now, the next Invest Talk, the story behind this question, is it possible to balance the books for Social Security? We're going to talk about that story tomorrow, but for now, I'm Justin Klein. I'm ready to take your question live at 888-99-CHART.
One of the most rewarding things I do each weekday is host the Invest Talk podcast. I truly enjoy helping investors, and I know that every question counts and every answer I provide will be unbiased. You, the caller, get to chart the course for each Invest Talk podcast. Call with your questions anytime, day or night, 888-99-CHART.
Hey guys, just want to get your thoughts on Amazon. I'm only 29 years old, so I'm looking to buy it and hold it for about the next 30 years. Just love to get your thoughts on it for a long-term play. Thanks. Love what you guys do.
Well, Amazon is obviously a very interesting and powerful company, and they did well for a long, long time. But going along with the theme of this show, they were a huge beneficiary of globalization and cheap labor. in their warehouse, delivering items, etc. And that allowed them to launch something like Amazon Prime and deliver products in 2 days. And obviously, they still can do that. But you can see with their recent earnings report where they only earned 3 cents, down from $1.39 in the fourth quarter of 2021, right? Down 98% in earnings. That this is an environment where they're not going to do quite as well. So there's always a valuation that makes it reasonable. Well, they're supposed to make $1.53 this year, $2.50 next year, but both of those estimates are coming down. Okay. Just not cheap enough in my mind. And that's why, you know, the longer term themes for Amazon are not in their favor. But to be reliant on the vast majority of their business coming from the ease that comes with Amazon Prime. Retail revenue is about 80% of its total revenue. Now, Amazon Web Services, which is a cloud computing service, storage, database service, etc., that's about 10 to 15% of the revenue. And frankly, that's the most profitable part of their business. And will probably benefit from more tailwinds versus headwinds. But once again, 80% of the revenue comes from that retail side. And so if you look at its total, let's see what it's trading at. Enterprise value EBITDA, about 25. Pretty high. Now, forward-looking, that's much better. It looks much better. But that's forward-looking. That's based on estimates, and those estimates continue to come down. So Amazon has to be on your watch list, but it needs to improve technically. It still remains in a downtrend, making consistent lower highs and lower lows. And the earnings picture has to start looking better, not worse. I want analysts to be upgrading its earnings expectations, not downgrading it. So overall, I'm going to pass on Amazon for now. Just not a great entry point at this point. Thanks for the call. Now, let's touch on your standard deduction. We are coming into the end of, today's the last day of February. Remember, February is it's a fast month. It comes quick and it ends quick. And that means we're 6 weeks away from having to file your taxes, 6-7 weeks. So let's look a bit at some changes, mainly to the standard deduction that you're going to take or not take on your upcoming taxes. Now, for 2022, the standard deduction was $12,950 for single filers. It was $25,900 for married couples filing jointly. But that's been upped. So this year, it's going to go up to $13,850, so $900 increase for 2023 for single. And 27.7, which is about an $1,800 increase for married couples, which makes sense, right? Now, taxpayers that are 65 or older, and you actually get an extra standard deduction. I don't know if you knew this, but $1,500 for 2023 if you're a married couple filing jointly. That's up $100 from the $1,400 last year. If you're single, it's going to be at $1,850, also up $100 from last year's $1,750. So I don't know if you knew that, there is that interesting wrinkle there. Now, 90% of filers now take the standard deduction because of the tax law that passed in 2017. And the number of filers who itemized their deductions dropped to about 15 million in 2021 from 47 million in 2017. So huge difference in that. And this allows you to write off things like your charitable donations, state and local taxes, medical expenses, mortgage interest, all of that. So you want to, I always say, if you have a very straightforward tax return, you are a W-2 employee, you don't own a home, you just rent, you don't have a lot of other assets, filing it yourself, TurboTax is just fine. Once you start owning a home, you have a little bit of complexity to your life, typically paying a CPA is a leg up for you. So think about that as we head into tax season. Let's go to Dan in Concord. Wants to talk about gold stocks.
Hi, Justin. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
Hey, I was calling about both gold and oil. I've got a couple of positions in each, and I was wondering if this is a good time to add on.
Yeah, we actually added on some of the gold names in our portfolios today in a nice bullish day off some major support. So we like that space overall. We don't think rates are really going to break out. You had rates come in a little bit today and reverse really from the highs. So that's always a tailwind for gold prices. The dollar was strong, even but gold was actually up on the day. So that was a nice little change of scenery after this recent pullback. Overall, the technicals on the miners remain fine. Obviously, a strong pullback over the past past month or so, but nothing has changed that uptrend that remains since the lows back in September. So we still like those. The energy space, that's been a bit more volatile, but overall in an uptrend. So I think I'm fine with both. I'd be buying them on dips.
Great. Thanks very much for your help.
No problem. Now, when people take the time to leave an InvestTalk review on iTunes, we'd like to thank them for the courtesy by getting to their questions quickly. JDC Auburn says, I came across two possible Ukrainian stocks that seem to be undervalued. EPOM Solutions, originally a Belarusian company, but now headquartered in the U.S., offers software solutions, and WAB, Westinghouse, W-A-B, seems to have all the contracts to provide fuel for Ukrainian nuclear plants. So let's look at these. Here is EPOM Systems, outsourced IT and lifecycle software. Interesting. Okay. The technicals don't look great. It looks a bit expensive in my mind. Growth is certainly slowing. A year ago, revenues are 50%, earnings are 50%. But last quarter, revenues up 11% and earnings up 6%. So does it deserve a high multiple when you're headed probably towards some sort of earnings contraction? This year, earnings are expected to be only up 4%, and those estimates continue to come down. You know, in my mind, no. Right, price sales at 3.7, not terrible, but certainly not cheap. Enterprise value to EBITDA right around 23, still pretty high, and the technicals are poor. Not a fan. Yeah, not a fan at these levels until there's some understanding of where earnings are going to level out at and growth is going to level out at. Okay, so interesting one to have on your watch list. I like that it's in the software space. I like the margins and the profitability viewpoint. I just don't like the valuation. So one to keep on your watch list. And the other one was, what was the other one? Pull it up here. Oh yeah, WabTech. So it's interesting that you say this, not WabTech, Westinghouse. Westinghouse Air Brake Tech. That's the name of the company now. And you're saying that they supply Ukrainian nuclear plants, but I don't think that's the case anymore. I believe from my Cameco, company we own, they bought Westinghouse's nuclear business and out of bankruptcy. And now WAB is just simply a pure play on the braking systems for trains. And now you could say there's a different catalyst there where you have the crashes in East Palestine, Ohio, as well as the rest of the country. A lot of that has to do with rolling back regulation a few years ago. I think it was about 4 or 5 years ago, where they allowed more rail cars with the same braking system. They allowed hazardous materials to be shipped alongside non-hazardous materials, so kind of mixed-use cars without any upgrades to the braking system. And so the question now is, because of these recent spat of train crashes, will that bring a different calculus to the risk versus reward of investing in better braking systems and more regulation around the safety in the industry? And that could be a catalyst for Westinghouse Air Brake Technologies to get a lot more business. So that would be a catalyst for me. And if you want to play the uranium space, the nuclear space, you're going to be wanting to buy a company like Cameco. All right. So I hope that helps on both fronts. Now let's keep things moving and pivot to the InvestTalk Voice Bank for a question that came in earlier from Minnesota on 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve and Justin, longtime listener and caller from Minnesota. Love the show. Thank you guys for everything. I have a quick question. In my portfolio, I currently do not have any REITs at all, and I'm considering diversifying out and adding some in the volatile market we're having in. I've been searching around, and I was wondering what you think of VNQ. It's a REIT that contains REITs, I guess, in a couple different sectors and pays a decent dividend and has had some growth. So I'd be listening and hoping to hear your thoughts and opinions on this REIT and what you think about it. Thank you.
All right. Well, this is not a REIT. This is an ETF that holds REITs. Big difference there. So understand this is the fund. This is the Vanguard Real Estate ETF, VNQ. It's one of the largest REIT funds that's out there. $34.7 billion in total assets. Yields about 3.5% based on the current price. And you're right. You're getting diversified exposure to the REIT space across different aspects of the real estate market. So if you're looking to add exposure there, this is one of the best kind of low-cost, broad-based exposure that you can get. Very liquid, very easy to buy and hold and collect that dividend. Now, is it the best REIT ETF out there? I'm sure you can find ones that are probably a bit better, have a better mix of exposures to real estate sectors that you might like a little bit more. But once again, it's large, it's broad-based, and will probably work for you if you're trying to gain exposure. And I don't think it's a terrible idea. They tend to be pretty good performers in an inflationary environment. Not the best, but better than average. Now, this is InvestTalk. We're happy to report we have now achieved over 50 million downloads thanks to you. And we will take another question next. So hang on.
Mark your calendar for Wednesday, March 22nd from 2 to 3 p.m. Pacific Time. You are invited to a new KPP Financial Wealth Webinar. Value Investing, Positioning Your Portfolio for Profitability, Relative Price, and Dividend Payments. Be sure to tell your friends and family members about the new KPP Financial Wealth Webinar. It's free, and you can register now at investtalk.com.
Hi, Justin or Steve. I wanted to get your opinion on Repligen, ticker symbol RGEN. I was thinking of picking it up after earnings, the picks and shovel play on biotech healthcare sector, but it seems like it's still pricey. If you could take a look, I would really appreciate it. Thank you. Bye.
All right. This is Repligen, RGEN, about a $10 billion market cap, develops consumable bioprocessing products for the life science and biopharma industries. And last quarter, revenues were flat year over year. Earnings were down 16%. Earnings supposed to be down 17% this year. It's supposed to rebound next year. But those estimates continue to go down, trading at a very high multiple, 50 times earnings. Even if you go based on next year's earnings, you're still talking 40-ish times earnings. No, I really don't like this name because of the space that it's in, right? It's, yes, when there's a lot of R&D within the biotech space, they're going to do well, but that R&D money has to come from somewhere. And when times are good, when money is cheap, those biotech companies have a lot of money to go and play and do their R&D and try to, you know, make their next medical breakthrough. And companies like Repligen are going to benefit from that. But when the cost of capital is higher, and instead of those companies consistently getting funding, a lot of them are going to go bankrupt. Or their cost, or if they can raise capital, it's going to be at a much higher interest rate. And so more money is going to go towards interest versus spending money on R&D, for example. And when they raise capital, they're probably not going to raise quite as much. So in a tougher funding environment for the biotech space, this is not going to do very well. And then you add on top of it that it's trading at a very high multiple. So I'm going to say this is actually, I think this actually looks like a pretty good short, to be honest with you. So if I wouldn't do either. Wouldn't buy this or I wouldn't short it. But if you had a gun to my head and you said, you know, will this be lower or higher 2 years from now? I'm definitely going to say lower. Thanks for the call. Now, I wanted to just remind you all that we are giving away 50 free annual subscriptions to our premium newsletter to celebrate our 50 millionth download. All thanks to you guys. So that's what we're giving back to you guys. There's a lot of ways. There's three ways you can basically enter. They all have to do with liking and mentioning some people on our socials. So Instagram, LinkedIn, and Facebook. So if you want to head over there, you'll see the instructions and you can enter to win a free year of our premium newsletter. Now we're heading into our final break. So give me a call now at 888-99-SHARP.
Each day, InvestTalk listeners submit their finance and investment questions via phone or email. Would you like your question to be put near the top of the list? Just take a minute or two to leave a review and rating for InvestTalk at iTunes. And be sure to include a brief question with your iTunes review comments.
Hello, Stephen, Justin. This is Paul from Germany. Congratulations to your 50 million subscribers, first of all. I'm very happy for you guys, and I'm very thankful, and I appreciate the work you guys do. So my question today is about corporate bonds. I would like to apply this question on Microsoft specifically. The stock makes around 6% of my portfolio, and it pays a dividend of a little over 8%, and it's up like 50% since I bought it. So the question is, like, would it make sense to take some profits and reinvest it in the bond of the same company? I saw one expiring in March 6 in 2027, yielding 3.3%. My question is basically, how does it work? Do I get the annualized yield plus my invested capital back, or does that depend on the share price at the moment I sell? My assumption is that tech stocks won't overperform the coming years, considering the midterm market environment, and that's why I'm looking for a way to maximize my cash flow. And I hope my question is not too complicated and can be answered on the podcast. I'll be looking forward to hearing the answer, and thank you guys for all your help, and congrats once again also for the community you guys built. This is the number one platform for me when it comes to investing. Thank you. Bye-bye.
I appreciate that, those kind words, and you're looking at Microsoft. You're up pretty decently, it looks like. I wasn't quite clear on how you're calculating this, but you know, I think the main question is, should you sell out some of your Microsoft stock? Is the bonds a better buy right now? Well, you're looking at the 2027 bonds yielding about 4.6%. Not great. You know, I think there's better opportunities in the corporate bond market than that. You can get a six-month treasury and get 5%, right? So I don't love that. I don't love that alternative. You know, I would say I do think it's a time to reduce your position in Microsoft. I'm kind of somewhat down, as I am on a lot of the large cap tech space, especially the tech software companies that are tied to businesses who are laying off a lot of tech workers that use Microsoft products, for example. So I would be trying to lighten your load of and your exposure to Microsoft. But I wouldn't necessarily just go to the bonds. And what you're going to look at is not just the coupon rate, because the coupon rate can be very different between different bonds that you're looking at, even different bond issues of the same company. Right? Where Microsoft, that one you're talking about, is a coupon rate of 3.3%. But if you look at something like the ones that mature in August of this year, the coupon's 2%. And that yields maturity is about 6.5. So very different there. So you're going to look at total yield. The yield to worst is what you're going to look at in the corporate bond space. Now let's see if we can fit in one more question.
Hello, this is Travis from Houston. I'm calling to inquire about Nokia, N-O-K. Wanting to see if you guys can discuss their recent rebranding and strategy. I'm hoping this is going to kick up some life and be a good investment. I believe their PE is quite low. Please let me know your thoughts. Thank you. Long time listener. Appreciate all you do.
All right. This is Nokia. Yes, Nokia. Now, they don't really make phones anymore, I don't believe. But most of their business comes from selling telecom equipment and services to the big wireless companies like an AT&T, like a Verizon, et cetera. And it's still about a $26 billion market cap. So good company. But it is trading at a low multiple, but that's probably for a good reason. Their revenue and earnings growth is pretty muted, and their technicals don't look great, to be honest with you. So, you know, I don't get excited about this name. It does look cheap, but I think it's cheap for a reason. So I'm going to pass on Nokia. I'm Justin Klein. This is another Invest Talk program. Steve Peasley and I thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Independent thinking. Shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.